Proceed to the fifth case, Tony versus Rosewood Care. Mrs. Schwartz.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Randall Schwartz. I represent the appellants in this case. We are seeking a reversal of the district court's order dismissing this case on April 3rd with prejudice pursuant to Rule 16. On April 3rd, 2002 of this year, the court dismissed this class action case. The pretrial order in the case was due April 1st. It was filed April 2nd. The court's reasons for dismissing this case include alleged deficiencies in the pretrial order. One, a deficiency in the calculation of damages, and two, the absence of certain jury instructions. In its order on our motion to reconsider, the court brought up other conduct prior to this issue related to the pretrial order as additional bases for its decision. When this court reviews Judge Kennelly's decision, it does so on an abuse of discretion standard, which is enormously high. It is one that this court can only reverse if it finds that no reasonable person would do the same thing that Judge Kennelly did. When considering this appeal, I think a couple things are important to keep in mind. First, the system that we work under favors resolving cases on their merits and not disposing of cases on technicalities. In this case, not only have there been motions to dismiss fought and lost, and motions for summary judgment fought and lost, and it's become apparent that there are issues that a jury needs to resolve. By disposing of this case in the manner it did, the court deprived the plaintiffs, which are essentially about 150 ex-employees of a nursing home, of their day in court. The second thing to consider is that these rules that we work under should be interpreted to do justice between the parties. And at the end of the day, this court sits as really the final arbiter on that issue. And when deciding this appeal, should consider whether the dismissal of this action in the manner it was disposed of does justice between the litigants in this case. The absence of the information contained in the pretrial order, I believe, does not result in any prejudice to the defendants in the case. This was one in which the pretrial order was filed, and I ask you to look at that in the appellate record. It contained the party's factual assertions, it contained witnesses, it contained objections to those witnesses, it contained all of the evidence and exhibits to be produced at trial, it included the objections to all of those evidence and exhibits, it contained the lion's share of the jury instructions, and I believe comported substantially with the court's order. There's no question but that the court ordered this document to be filed on April 1st, and it was not filed until April 2nd.
Well, there had been a little history before that April date, though, about deadlines. Is that right, Mr. Schwartz?
Yes, Your Honor. And in those cases, those issues had been addressed. This was a class action, and it's true. There was discovery sent to the entire class. Class members did not respond to those, even after the motion to compel and the order to do so and my instruction to them to comply. It's true that those class members that did not respond were sanctioned by the court's order barring them from testifying at trial. But those sanctions are to those class members. By using that as a basis for its dismissal, the court really punished the remaining class members for the conduct of those other class members. And those were issues that were decided and I think appropriately dealt with early on in the case. And Your Honor is right. There were issues also with respect to expert disclosures that were done. But ultimately, when we came into court on April 3rd, everything was done.
Well, we didn't have jury instructions.
That's true.
And the absence of jury instructions really, it does impact trial dates, or the how ready the court can be for that. And, you know, and that, of course, affects scheduling.
Yes, sir, I understand that.
Do you have any way to explain away that, that the instructions weren't contained?
Your Honor, I wish I did. When I left town and returned on the 2nd, before I left town, believe me, I put instructions that they needed to be filed and that they needed to be included, and that they needed to be filed on April 1st.
And on the question of damages, I understand that was absent also, and the court, I guess, asked from the bench what would they be, and there wasn't any response, any sort of specific response, other than to say, I don't know. I guess in a standalone situation without the prior history, before April, this might have a little different cast to it, but do you want us to focus just on April 2nd and April 1st, or are we not to reference what Judge Cannelli does the earlier months?
No, Judge, I think you have to consider it all, and I think that's what the legal standard is in this court, is that this court should consider the history of the case. And you're absolutely right that there was deadlines that were missed, specifically two main categories, one dealing with experts and the other dealing with responses to written discovery from various class members. The class members' discovery that was late and that was not forthcoming was dealt with, and the court barred those class members from presenting evidence at trial, which presumably would bar them from recovering. And that was an appropriate sanction in that case, and it was dealt with and over. By using that, as I said, as a reason to dismiss the whole case, you're punishing the people that remain for conduct of other class members who have already been sanctioned for their conduct. With respect to the expert disclosures, there's no doubt that plaintiff's disclosures were tardy, that they were supplemented, but at the end of the day, complied with. And the expert was produced, his report was produced, he was deposed months before the April 3rd date. I think at the end of the day, what happened was this: Judge Cannelli was angry. And I'm not saying that he didn't have reasons to be. But anger does not mean reason. The court dismissed this case wherein these 150 or so people had demonstrated their right to come before a jury in the case. And I would ask this court, before it renders its decision in this case, to consider two things. First, whether the pretrial order that was submitted on April 3rd was done in bad faith or in a willful disregard for the court's order. I believe it complied as much as it could with the court order. I do not have a reason that it was filed late. I do not have a reason that this court, a good one, for the jury instructions not being in the case. I do think that given the submission as it was, a lesser sanction could have been fashioned. I believe that the plaintiffs could have had an opportunity to adequately respond and correct those. And in sum, I'd ask this court to reverse the decision of the district court in this case. Thank you.
Thanks, Ford. Mr. Hamburg?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I represent the defendants, Rosewood Care Center of Joliet, as well as HSM Management Services. I'm also here on behalf of co-defendant Phil Mendelson, who is represented in the trial court by Mary Mazurk, who's sitting in one of the pews.
I have a question before you even start.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
It's this. As we all know, in a class action, many of the plaintiffs don't really choose, you know, their lawyer. So the argument that you make in the brief that the parties are bound by their lawyer's acts doesn't apply quite the same way, you know, that it would in a non-class action. Once it was clear that counsel was not serving the class in a perfect way, shouldn't the court have decertified the class before dismissing with prejudice? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I think what you're trying to say is perhaps did the court have a duty to impose a lesser sanction by decertification or just changing the form of the proceeding somewhat?
Well, if he had decertified the class before dismissing with prejudice, then the unnamed plaintiffs would not be prejudiced at this point.
Well, I have not seen a case in that with that factual scenario. I don't believe. I guess that if the court were allowed under the rules relating to decertification to do that, certainly the court could have done that.
Yeah.
This case is interesting in that the argument is made that the sins of the lawyer should not be put onto the clients, and of course there's much Seventh Circuit law. Judge Flom, I believe, has written, and you perhaps were involved in that somewhat in Ball, as a trial it's coming back to haunt you, as the trial judge. In this case, it's interesting because the plaintiffs themselves, members of the class, failed to respond to discovery and committed sins themselves, which was the lesser sanctions, and therefore could have or should have been aware through communication by counsel that this case was going south. And I think Judge Cannelli understood that this case was going south due to the fact that there was so little response being made by the members of this so-called class to the repeated requests of the defendants for answers to written discovery so that depositions would be taken, which resulted in the sanctions. So while I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, there was opportunity for these class members to participate. There was communication between these class members and Mr. Schwartz, such that they should have developed relationships with Mr. Schwartz over this period of time and come to some conclusion as to whether or not he was adequately representing their interests. And I'm not here to slam Mr. Schwartz today or talk about the rules or the rules. What I am here and the points I wanted to make simply refer to what the precedent is in the Seventh Circuit with regard to the district judges who are presumed in cases like this to have acted reasonably, and to point out that reversal is warranted only if it is plain that the dismissal was a mistake or that the judge didn't consider factors that were essential to the exercise of sound discretion. And the court is aware of additional Seventh Circuit law where it is discussed that the court is not required to impose or evaluate whether lesser sanctions would be available. Issue is squarely discussed in the National Hockey League case, which is cited in the brief. We know there are three grounds for a dismissal under 16F, willfulness being one of them. And I think the record clearly reflects the judge's finding of willfulness, and I don't know a basis for that finding to be disturbed. And the judge, I left it over there, but at A38 of the appendix that the appellant has filed, the judge clearly indicates that the plaintiffs knowingly failed to comply with the court orders, and what he said was tantamount to willfulness, and I believe that it is not the conduct that he talks about in the memorandum and order with regard to the motion to reconsider and what he said in open court when he ruled is an indication of his belief that there was contumacious conduct displayed on behalf of the plaintiff that would support his decision to dismiss the case under 16F. And I think given the state of the law in the Seventh Circuit, there are no exceptional circumstances here where the events have not been within the meaningful control of either the defaulting plaintiffs who failed to respond or to the attorney that would allow this case to be reinstated. The abuse of discretion standard, as the appellant admits, is very narrow. It is met only when it is clear that no reasonable person could concur in the trial court's assessment of the issue under consideration. The court considered the status of the case at the time of the dismissal. The court knew the procedural history of the case. And I do think that there is law to the effect that he is in the best position to make this determination after having had the litigants in front of him and listened to arguments and had generally familiarity with the entire proceeding. So all I'm indicating is that under the laws of the Seventh Circuit, given this narrow standard, given the deference to be paid to the trial judge, we would be requesting that the Rule 16F dismissal be affirmed to allow the district courts to continue to achieve orderly and expeditious disposition of cases.
Thank you.
Mr. Schwartz?
Your Honor, I'd just like to address the willfulness argument raised. The pretrial order was due April 1st. I left word to have it filed April 1st. When I returned on April 2nd, I found out it had not been filed until early that day. I don't believe I did not intend, nor do I believe it was a willful violation of the court's order. Thank you.
Can I have a question before you go?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There's a subset of about 30 to 32 people that have responded to discovery that have been deposed and that presumably therefore would go forward at trial.
32 people have been deposed?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.